halfway through the Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Jets and the Hurricanes, 6 p.m. tonight. A game you can hear live, of course, on TSN 1290. Paul Maurice, speaking with the media, confirms that Connor Hellebuck will get the start in goal tonight for the Manitoba Moose. Also confirms Adam Lowry out of the lineup tonight. He's day-to-day with an upper body injury. Dustin Byfuglien back in the lineup. So again, Byfuglien back, Hellebuck starts, Lowry out of the lineup for tonight's game.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program James O'Brien from the NBC's Pro Hockey Talk. James, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, James. Obviously brought you on to take a look around the league through the first week or 10 days of the season so far. You know, as you've looked around and as you've sort of watched whatever you've watched so far, anything in particular jumping out at you as sort of a surprise thus far this year?
Well, certainly some of the cellar dwellers or expected cellar dwellers have had good starts. The Red Wings are 4-1, the Golden Knights are 4-1, and the 3-1, sorry, and the Avalanche are 4-1. So three division leaders no one would have expected so far.
You know, James, speaking of surprising teams, you just mentioned the Colorado Avalanche. Is there a more surprising player in the NHL than Nail Yakupov? Because it looked like Colorado was the only team that wanted him.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. I think he's it's one of the best stories in the league if he can keep this up. In St. Louis, he never really got a chance. You can't blame the Oilers for not giving him a chance, but in St. Louis, you know, he was a healthy scratch most of the time, and that's not their fault. They had a deep pool of forwards, especially last season. And, you know, Hitchcock is one of those guys that just doesn't trust certain players. So Yakupov was a natural for him not to trust. But, you know, I mean, he's shooting three times a game and only 13 minutes a night. So he's not even getting a lot of ice time. It's pretty mind-blowing. But it's the perfect situation of a team needing that boost and a player needing to save his career. So I hope it's not a total fluke.
James, the Dallas Stars won the offseason, we were told, but they were off to a rather bumpy start. What do you think is going on in Big D?
I think they're just mainly having bad luck. I was looking at it. Of the two, of all the NHL teams at even strength, only the Montreal Canadiens coming into Friday had a worse team shooting percentage. I think the Stars were around 4%. The Canadiens are somehow around 2%. So that's going to go the other way. Ben Bishop got that weird eye injury where somehow it got in his mask. And Tyler Seguin hasn't really been having the greatest shooting luck either. They have a lot of things that have been working against them. That said, I'm a little disappointed because the Stars a couple seasons ago were the most exciting team in the league by miles. And now they're dialing it back by bringing in Hitch and all these slow-footed defensemen. So while I think they'll be okay, I'm still a little bummed out. They're just not that fun anymore.
James O'Brien, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. James is with NBC's Pro Hockey Talk. James, the Colorado Avalanche won again last night, 4-1 thus far on the season. Should we just assume that they're going to be the Western Conference champions at this point?
No. I mean, we have to remember that last season, Patrick Waugh basically left that team at the altar. It was, I think there were like 2 weeks left before the training camp was going to start. So Jared Bednar didn't just get rushed into the situation. I mean, they had almost no option for a coach last summer. So it makes some sense that they were a disaster. I don't know if they're a playoff team, though, because there's just that central division's pretty stacked. Although with the way the Wild and the Blues are getting injured, we'll have to see. But it's nice when those teams, you know, that were once borderline dynasties stop being depressing at least. So that's a refreshing thing to see.
James, before we brought you on, we were talking about Alex Ovechkin and the torrid start to the season for Ovechkin. 9 goals and 1 assist in his first 5 games. The Capitals defeated the previously undefeated New Jersey Devils. What do you make of Ovi's start to the season?
Well, obviously he's getting some luck. He only had hit on 10% of his shots last season. He's at 31%. That's going to go down, obviously. But I do like that he's shooting a ton. For whatever reason, and I think part of it was just that the Capitals were lapping everyone last season, he wasn't shooting quite as much. He was shooting about a little under 4 shots a game, which is nothing for Ovechkin. And so far this season, he's right under 6. Usually he's around 5. If he's getting that many shots, you know, let's say he gets 2 or 3 shots from his office per game, that's close to a goal right there. It's like one of those glitches in a video game where there's just no stopping it. So I think as long as he's healthy and he's firing away like that, I think 50 is perfectly reasonable for him to get back to that level. Maybe, you know, mid-50s since he's had such a hot start. But you were saying earlier that he throws his body around, and while he's not as active as he was, you know, at 20, that's certainly true, and I think it makes his sturdiness especially mind-blowing. A lot of times he'd only get suspended as far as missing games, so I feel like at some point he has to start to kind of wear down, but it hasn't happened yet.
James, we hear a lot about Jack Eichel being sick of losing. It seems to be a common theme in the last couple of seasons. What do you think the Sabres can do to alleviate some of that losing?
Yeah, they need to still have a way to just send defense because they're in at least on Friday, this Jack Eichel's line literally has scored all their goals. They're just messing up and down. That's almost a good thing in a way because you can say, look, we're not playing our best. We're playing about as poorly as we can, so there's nowhere to go but up aside from maybe that Eichel line. The problem is that you look at that roster, and it's hard to see where that better defense is coming from beyond how they may be finding ways to beat the Penguins and just sort of trying to outscore their problem. I think Robin Leonard will be better. He's kind of a nut job, but he's a pretty good goalie. So he's going to have to save them a bit, and I think they'll probably just have to mask their mistakes.
James O'Brien, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're looking around the NHL through the first week to 10 days of the season. James, in Tampa Bay, the Lightning are off to a nice start with a 3-1 record. Nikita Kucherov is off to a nice start himself with 7 points in the first 4 games. We know he sort of broke out last year with the 85 points in 74 games. Is that the ceiling for him, or do you think that he can even achieve more than what he did last season?
I think he could flirt with 90. I think it's going to come down to will Stamkos be healthy? Because as we know, Kucherov was not happy with his line mates when Stamkos wasn't healthy last season. I mean, if he can do 85 with a sort of a motley group of line mates, then I think 90 is fair if he can stay healthy. And I haven't really seen any signs that Kucherov is injury prone. So, you know, he's only 24. That's the mind-blowing thing about it. So you think he's still on the upward scale for his career. He certainly has, you know, you look at the way NHL contracts work now. There's a lot of times could be 2 contract years. So he's got, I mean, he's getting paid just a ridiculous, like, 4-point-something per year. And that's absurd. And that might be the Lightning window. So he's got all this motivation. He's just this insatiable force. So, you know, I think that 90 is possible. It won't be easy. Not in this modern NHL, but he's firing away. And he's looking great. That overtime goal he scored was just gorgeous.
James, why aren't more people talking about the Detroit Red Wings? They beat the Vegas Golden Knights last night 6-3. Anthony Mantha had 3 points. Mantha's off to a great start. Zetterberg's off to a great start. I know you wrote about Mike Green for NBC's Pro Hockey Talk recently. Why aren't more people talking about the surprising start of the Red Wings?
You know, that's a great question. And I'm looking at their schedule. They played 4 of their first 5 games on the road, too. I think it's just people weren't mentally prepared for this team to be adequate, and so far they are. They're not getting outshot like crazy. There's some talent on that roster, but it just, they've always felt the last 2 or 3 years just like a really depressing team. And all of a sudden, they haven't had the toughest opponents. The Stars are their toughest opponents. They've played Vegas, the Coyotes, the Senators without Carlson. So this upcoming stretch will be a really good test. They're playing the Lightning on Monday, the Maple Leafs on Wednesday, and the Capitals on Friday. If they make it to next weekend and they're still looking good, even maybe going 2-1 in that stretch, then I think we could start to talk a little bit more about the Red Wings.
James, what's the status of Leon Draisaitl?
I do not know. All I know is that, as Todd McLellan said, that he has a black eye and they're swelling. The Edmonton Journal's Jim Matheson reported that it could be a concussion, and I don't know if I've seen that anywhere else. The team didn't confirm it. So it seems like that's in limbo right now, but they can't take any chances, particularly with an eye injury. No, I didn't actually see what happened either. He wears a visor, so I'm not sure when that eye injury even happened.
Yeah, and we hope he's okay. Sticking with Leon Draisaitl, do you prefer Todd McLellan using him alongside Connor McDavid, or do you think maybe it would be a good idea to split those two up? Because when they've played together, we just saw them recently against the Jets. They're probably the best duo in the entire league.
Yeah, it's a confidence thing, I guess, in the Ryan Nugent-Hopkins of the world and the Ryan Strome. Do you really feel like you can construct a good second line? I can see the logic. It's not the best use of assets. I mean, he's $8.5 million a year. When you look at that contract, you want a guy to carry his own line, just pure economics. You look around the league, Taves and Kane, they carry their own lines. Malkin and Crosby, obviously. But, he's still 20, or he's on the edge of 21. It might not be the worst idea just to kind of get that monkey off of his back contract-wise and let him get off to a good start. And then you could experiment with splitting them up. We saw in the playoffs that McLellan did put Draisaitl on his own line against the Sharks, and he did quite well. So, McLellan has the freedom to mix and match with that. And at first, I was a little critical of it, but I could see the logic in just, a player like that, that young, getting that contract, maybe you ease them into that deal.
James, we'll let you go on this last question. The forwards that are injured for the Minnesota Wild are probably more impressive than the forwards that are healthy. Parisi, Granlund, Niederreiter, Foligno, and Coyle, all out of the Minnesota Wild lineup. Do you think that they can withstand the loss of those 5 key components to their team?
I think they can. I don't think it's going to be pretty. They do play a lot of home games for the next few weeks, which won't cover all those injuries. Honestly, Bruce Boudreau has pulled the rabbit out of the hat so many times that I feel frightened to question his regular season magic, at least. Going into last season, I don't think people were particularly excited about the Wild, and they almost won their division for the first time in ever, I believe. So it's tough, but I think they can stay on the bubble until some of those guys come back.
James O'Brien is with NBC Sports Pro Hockey Talk. James, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Anytime.
Take care, James. When we come back, we look at some surprising starts to the 2017-18 NHL season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Neil Yakupov, Austin Matthews, same amount of goals. So it's early in the season, but it's nice to see there's so many people, including myself, that have kicked Neil Yakupov in the shins as far as his development and the way he plays the game and is it perceived. Early success is at least something for the Colorado Avalanche.
It's TSN's Jamie McLennan, and I'm assuming he hasn't actually...
Noodles.
I assume he literally hasn't kicked.
Yakupov
in the shins, but you never know. I think it's good that TSN employs a guy named Noodles and a guy named Chicken Parm. Yeah, you know, with Ray Ferraro, that of course being his nickname as well.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that Ferraro was nicknamed Chicken Parm?
Nope.
That's what he always ordered. I happen to also enjoy a good Chicken Parm.
Oh, Chicken Parm is fabulous.
Yeah.
I like a veal parm too.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay. I know PETA might not like that, but I like meat. I'm a meat eater.
I think PETA's got bigger problems than just dealing with you, but it's good to know anyways. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
Speaking of meat.
When the puck drops, Bernstein's Deli is the place to be. 6 p.m. tonight, you got the Jets and the Canes if you're looking for a place to watch it. Bernstein's Deli's got all your big screen TVs. They got your great deli food, your deli pub food. They got your cold beer. Bernstein's Deli, hashtag hockey night at Bernstein's in the Cordon Village Mall, corner of Cordon and Lanark.
Yeah, I was there for the game Thursday night, and I obviously had an Illegal Curve sandwich. Had one of their new pub items, pickle chips.
Pickle chips.
Yeah, they were delicious.
In fact, I think we should start calling you pickle chips.
Okay.
If we have a noodles and a chicken parm, you can be pickle chips.
Sure.
What do you think, Dave? That's a good nickname for him, don't
I'm actually
you?
Okay with pickle chips.
Yeah, pickle chips Ginsburg.
I like to drink old
pickle
chips. Old
chips Ginsburg. You sound like a baseball player from the 1920s. You know? Old pickle chips Ginsburg threw 284 innings, 13 consecutive complete games, and lost all of them in 1920 for the Washington Generals.
You know, I want to not like that nickname, but I actually kind of like it. Like, call me Pickle Chips.
Alrighty, there you go, folks. We're done now. Pickle Chips Ginsburg, and I think we can end the show for now and all eternity. Well, anyways, let's talk about teams that are surprising. We spoke a little bit about it with James O'Brien. To me, the Colorado Avalanche are certainly right atop of that list. You know, they were a nice story to start, but you go into Anaheim last night, you win 3-1, I believe, that game was in Anaheim.
Yeah, it was 3-1, yeah.
Yeah. You know, they're 4-1 through the first five games. You know, Jared Bednar's got that team playing hard for him.
They really do. And let's be honest, guys. Colorado was the worst team in the league last year. They had 48 points, which is incredible in this day and age, Dave, of the three-point game. The fact that the Colorado Avalanche only had 48 points. And when they played the Jets, I mean, I think they beat the Jets at least once last year, if not twice. But the other three games went to the Jets. They were one of the worst teams that came through the Bell MTS Place. And it's a good story. I mean, it's only five games here. Let's not get too excited. I still don't think they're going to make the playoffs. Even though the Avalanche have been a surprising team, to me, the two most surprising teams have been the Devils and the Wings. And I realize that the Devils lost their first game last night to the Capitals, but you knew they weren't going to win the first 10 games of the year. And you got to throw in the Golden Knights as well. But to me, what's most intriguing about the Red Wings, Dave, is that not only are they in the new arena, the Little Caesars Arena, but this is a team that, even though they lost, Pavel Datsyuk and some other good players, this is a team that makes the playoffs every single year. And are they rebuilding? I wouldn't say that the Red Wings are rebuilding. You know, they're in maybe the middle of a slow rebuild, but they're 4-1. Mm-hmm. They won last night against the Vegas Golden Knights. And you look at that team, and you've still got Henrik Zetterberg, you've still got Franz Nielsen, you've still got Nicholas Cronwall, Jimmy Howard's playing really well. So, to me, the Red Wings,
without Athanasiou as well.
Well, Athanasiou has not signed, but yeah. Anthony Mantha and Dylan Larkin are great players. So, when you look at the Red Wings, I think they have a better chance at making the playoffs than either the Avalanche or the Devils, I would say. I didn't pick the Red Wings to make the playoffs, Dave, but I'm just saying, because they have made the playoffs every single year except for last year, what was it, 24, 25 years in a row, mm-hmm. I mean, and you know they're well coached with Blashill, so I mean, for me, the Red Wings have had the best start to the season of any team that we didn't expect much of this year.
Well, I think for the Red Wings, Dave, and I'll let you get in there in a second, is I think what's paying off for them is that they were so patient with all their prospects for so long that when these guys have finally gotten their first NHL action, they're almost seasoned veterans as professional hockey players because they kept them in the system for so long until they were ready to break through. So they're not rebuilding, but they have such a young team, but it's both a young and veteran team at the same time because these guys have played so much hockey at the professional level.
Yeah, and I'll let Dave get in here for a second, but you know, you mentioned they're young, but they're not one of the younger teams. I mean, Mantha and Dylan Larkin are the young players, but you know, a guy like Martin Frick, Dave saw him play for Grand Rapids last year. He's come into the lineup from the American Hockey League. He's got 3 goals and 4 points in 5 games. But you look at that D group, they brought in Trevor Daley. Mm-hmm. Mike Green is a veteran player. Jonathan Erickson, we mentioned Nicholas Cronwall. I mean, this isn't a team like the Vancouver Canucks, for example, that's full of young players on forward and on the back end. So I'm just saying, if we're talking about all these surprising teams, right, the Devils, the Avalanche, the Golden Knights, Detroit has the best chance, in my opinion, to sustain it. Again, I don't think they're going to end up being a playoff team because the Eastern Conference, I think, is better than the West, and it's going to be very tough in their division to make it. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Red Wings are, you know, right around that playoff line come March and April.
Well, Jimmy Howard in a .955 save percentage through his first three
games
certainly helps a lot there.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think Jimmy Howard is the key in that situation, is that he's played very well for the start of the season. Is it sustainable, as James O'Brien talked about? You know, they've got some very tough games coming up. They've beat up on a couple of the lesser teams so far in the last couple of games. So we'll see what Detroit can do. But, you know, I actually thought New Jersey, to me, was as surprising as a team as any, because nobody really anticipated it. You know, sure, they have a lot of nice young elements, and we've talked to Ken Danico the last couple of months a couple of times, and you know, he's very excited about the team, but I just didn't anticipate New Jersey having as strong a start to the season as they did. And you know, you really see it from all their players. They really have a buy-in for what they seem to be doing in New Jersey. So I've been impressed by them. I thought they kind of caught me off guard, and I really didn't anticipate, again, you know, all things taken for, you know, granted, for what they are, which
grain
is
of salt,
yeah, the grain of salt, the fact that it is a fairly, you know, early in the season, but still, I thought New Jersey's been pleasantly surprising.
Well, yeah, and I just wanted to say, you know, on the Devils, sticking on the Devils there, when you look at who's getting the goals, Jesper Bratt, who was a sixth-round pick last year, mm-hmm. 2016, I should say, he's got 3 goals. Brian Gibbons is a journeyman AHL forward.
Yeah.
He's got 3 goals on the season. He had a shorthanded 3-on-5 goal, actually. So,
and the Devils, the Leafs a couple nights ago.
So when you consider that, you know, Bratt and Brian Gibbons... Guys, Taylor Hall just scored his first goal of the year mm-hmm. last night. So it's not like Taylor Hall's been getting a lot of the goals. So, you know, you've been getting, you know, offense from unexpected sources. Also, Will Butcher has been a great addition. He was the big catch for the Devils, and he's been very well in his first 5 games. So
6 assists coming from the back end so far for the Devils in his first 4 games. And look, Corey Schneider had a down year last year. And he's sort of had a bounce-back start to the season so far. .924 save percentage. I mean, it starts with Corey Schneider for the Devils. We know that a lot of teams actually tried to maybe pry Corey Schneider out of New Jersey this offseason, see if they can buy low on a guy coming off of a bad year. Corey Schneider can be my goalie any day of the week. We know how good he is and how good he has been in his career in the NHL.
Yeah, well, he took the Manitoba Moose all the way to the Calder Cup final back in, what was that, 2009. So, excellent goaltender. I agree with you, Drew. And, you know, his numbers were down last year, but the Devils were a bad team. So the Devils are going to be a better team. Again, they're one of those teams I would be pretty surprised if they end up in a playoff spot just because they're a young team again. But when you throw Nico Hischier into the lineup, and he's had a pretty good start to the season. Pavel Zacha is a year older. He's been pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then you throw in, as we mentioned, Will Butcher, who won the Hobie Baker Award. He was the best defenseman in college hockey last year.
Young talent.
Yep.
I mean, that's what it boils down to, is they all of a sudden have this influx. This is a New Jersey Devils team that for so long never really had any young talent.
And they're going to get Travis Zajac back eventually.
Yeah, they never had any young, skilled players really coming through their lineup for a long time there. So now you add Nico Hischier. Taylor Hall isn't old by any stretch of the imagination. No. You know, Pavel Zacha, you mentioned him. You know, Marcus Johansson comes over from Washington. He gets sort of an opportunity to reestablish himself or maybe play a more prominent role on a team. That's a nice acquisition, and it's proven to be a nice acquisition so far in this offseason. So the Devils are a nice story so far, and they're well coached. They're well coached and they have a good
John Hines is an excellent coach. He was an excellent coach at the American Hockey League level, and he's doing a great job with that team. And, you know, again, it's only five games, but the first five games have been great. So it's giving them an opportunity to stay in the playoff race early, right?
Yeah. And Ray Shiro, you know, is a good general manager. Things may be ended poorly in Pittsburgh, pardon me, but Ray Shiro certainly knows what he's doing as a general
manager. Another guy they got, Mirko Mueller, they got him from the San Jose Sharks, you know, former high draft pick of the Sharks. You know, he's been a nice addition to that back end because that defense needed, you know, an infusion of puck-moving defensemen. So, yeah, they're better than they were last year, and it's only going to get better when you consider, as we mentioned, all the young talent they have in the lineup.
Yeah, we'll see the Devils. They come to Winnipeg next month on Saturday, November 18th, for a 2 o'clock start against the Winnipeg Jets. So we'll see if they can continue with that impressive performance. And you mentioned Nail Yakupov, you know, certainly been kicked around throughout the league. We heard Jamie McLennan off the top of the segment getting an opportunity in Colorado. You know, good for him. I got to know, you know, he was just dropped into such a bad situation in Edmonton for so long.
Well, he wasn't going to play on Edmonton, and he wasn't going to play on St. Louis, so at least he's getting to play now.
That's exactly right. Dustin Brown having a good start to the year in Los Angeles as well. That's a guy who's really had some down years since he sort of was a force for those L.A. Kings teams that were Stanley Cup contenders. He's got 5 points in 3 games played, and he's playing more he's playing more so far this year than he has in the last couple of years.
Well, speaking of the surprising teams in the league, I mean, L.A.'s 2-0-1. It's only been three games, but you know they've had a good start to the season. Jonathan Quick has been phenomenal. Anze Kopitar has had a hot start to the season as well. As you mentioned, Dustin Brown, a guy who's had some down seasons the last, four years since they won their last Stanley Cup. What was that, in 2014? So a good start for the Kings as well.
We will see if these teams can keep it going, if these teams and players can keep it going, but certainly some things to watch for the first week, 10 days of the NHL season. When we come back, interesting article from the Hockey News, 8 sort of off-the-wall ideas to make the game of hockey, even better.
I thought we were going to talk about the game of cricket.
No, that's not the game we're going to talk about. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, and old Pickle Chips Ginsburg here in studio with you. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsburg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text message here in studio. Send your messages to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply.
What are those standard messaging rates?
Well, I assume that if you don't have a text message plan, there's a cost to sending a text message. But in this day and age, I don't know of anybody who doesn't have a text messaging plan. But I think it's one of those things you just have to say. You know, it's part of the, you know, like lottery license XXX333, something like that. You have to say standard messaging rates apply.
Do you talk on the phone a lot?
In general?
I miss, you know, talking to people on the phone. It feels like nobody ever wants to talk. It's all just texting.
Oh, actually, you're more of a phone caller. You call people
on
the phone.
I like to hear a human voice on the other line.
Yeah. I prefer...
So when Ezzy calls, I actually use one of those automated
voices. Yeah, you sound like a robot?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good. What's more annoying is when people leave voicemails.
You actually like to use emoticons.
I'm actually 100% with you. Unless I don't know who you are,
don't leave me a voice. Because I have caller ID. And it's always my parents.
Yeah, my parents do too.
It's the only people who do it. I tell God bless them, I tell my parents all the time, I see that you've called.
I agree.
100%. I'll call you back. Don't leave me a message.
I don't mind a voice message, but it's when someone says, hi, it's me, call me back. And they don't really, like, give me some information in the voice message.
No, I'll do the me. It's me.
But you're leaving a voice message, even though you say you hate voicemail?
I'm a bit of an enigma wrapped in a riddle there.
Wrapped in a vest? I guess a hoodie is the case maybe today?
Yeah, a hoodie right now.
Yeah, a hoodie. It's a little chilly out there today anyways. 8 great, well, I don't know if they're great, but 8 interesting suggestions to make the game of hockey better. An article coming out of the Hockey News that we're going to piggyback on the first idea, which comes from Jason Kay, the editor-in-chief of the Hockey News.
Yeah, he's been the editor there for a while.
Yeah. Fewer games in the course of the regular season. He suggests you don't need 82 games. I certainly would agree with that. He's saying, how about you play a 60-game season, 2 games a week for 30 weeks? Your thoughts on fewer than 82 games. Is that a good suggestion that the NHL should incorporate? We know they won't, but should they?
Well, that's just it. I mean, they're not going to do it. They're going to keep 82 games for the foreseeable future. I do like the idea of fewer games. I don't know about going to 60, though. Like, I would probably go to 70. To go from 82 to 60, I mean, you're cutting out a quarter there, mm-hmm. if my math is correct.
You're not far off.
I mean, my dad was the mathematician, but I think I can do that, you know, maritime math in my head. But so, I mean, I do like the idea of playing fewer NHL games. Regular season games, but I'm going to say this, Drew. I don't know why I'm pointing at you right now.
Why are you aggressively jabbing your finger at me?
Well, I don't know if it was aggressive.
We're not on TV.
I was doing some pointing. I was really trying to hammer my point home, but really,
I'm glad you didn't hit me with a hammer.
It's the preseason that I think is really the bigger problem. That's something I would encourage the NHL to, as if I have some type of influence on the NHL. Uh-huh. But I would like to see less preseason games, and I think there's a more likelihood of that happening. Even though I again don't think that's going to happen, but there's something to be said for reducing the schedule, especially when you consider all the injuries and, mm-hmm. and the fact that really, guys, the season doesn't really start to matter, I would say, until mid to late November, right? So, I mean, American Thanksgiving is kind of that benchmark we use as far as the playoff line goes. We've talked about that before. There's a better chance of you making the playoffs if you're already in a playoff spot, right, Drew? So, yeah, I'm in favor of there being fewer games. I wouldn't go down to 60. I'd go down to 70. But again, there's absolutely no chance that that happens.
I don't think so either, but I think, and I'm in favor of reducing the schedule in the sense that you need the season to be over before June. There's no reason when it's right. beautiful in Winnipeg, and like why would
it's
I?
It's always beautiful in Winnipeg,
sure, but specifically, in, you know, if it's nice, it's warm out. I'm not watching. Like, who cares? Most people don't care at that point. So the fact is that you need to end the season before it starts to get warm and people want to be outside and not watching hockey as much. So from and just from an interest standpoint, 82 is a long season. Now, maybe you do more of a AHL 76, you know, but I mean, the point is moot because they're never going to reduce it because that's less revenue. So, I mean, what's the point of that?
Well, I wonder if
what are we talking about here, Drew?
Yeah. It seems like much ado about nothing because they're not going to start saying, you know, let's make less money, not more.
The second suggestion comes from Ken Campbell, who suggests that we get rid of the salary cap.
I think it's a terrible idea.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, what has the salary cap really done?
Well, I tell you, because you want to go back to the days when the Rangers had paid for the best team.
Right,
and,
but
you know,
the best players don't even hit unrestricted free agency anymore.
No, I don't like it. I think that this forces, first of all, it forces you to manage your salary cap. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it forces teams to be, it levels the playing field.
Right.
It essentially gives everybody the same opportunity. And I think that if you're a big market, don't get me wrong, Toronto circumvents it, you know, long-term IR for certain players. But like the reality is, I think that you're going to allow teams from the big markets to outbid on talent. And you're right, sure, maybe that talent doesn't hit, the opportunity to be free agency till, you know, 10 years, you know, till they're 26, 27 years old anyways. But the fact is, I mean, from my perspective, I don't want to go back to the days where the Rangers and the, you know, the big market, big money teams had all the talent.
Next suggestion is to move one of the referees from on the ice to the press box where he can make penalty calls from the press box, observing the game from high above.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So the purpose of the back referee is really to keep an eye on shenanigans that are happening maybe behind the play. Is that something that can be done from a bird's eye view in the press box?
Yeah, it's an interesting notion. I think you'd still want two referees on the ice, especially with the speed of the game. It just seems to get faster and faster, and the referees and linesmen still miss calls, right? So I like maybe the idea of having an off-ice official who isn't one of those two referees. Right, so maybe he can then have the ability to call down to the scorekeeper's bench and then maybe provide his insight. But I still think you'd probably want two referees on the ice.
I don't know. That one sort of intrigued me. If you're sort of, I don't know how logistically it would work. Like, does he have a very, very loud whistle that they can hear on the ice from the press box? But it's something that, you know, if he's watching.
It's actually a megaphone that he has.
It's just a large megaphone. He just sounds a siren, is basically what happens.
A cowbell.
A cowbell.
Big cowbell.
Interesting. Dave, next one comes from Matt Larkin, says get rid of offsides altogether.
No, I don't like it. I know. I mean, the game has to have some structure. You can't just it's not just like pond hockey where guys just can just enter the zone whenever they want, and there's a guy behind the net and you can just throw the puck to him. I mean, this isn't an all-star game where it's casual. The fact is, the game needs, in my mind at least, it needs some structure.
Drew, my apologies to Matt Larkin, because Matt Larkin is an excellent writer. He does a great job. He's on the big show often, but I don't like that one at all. And, I mean, offsides are part of hockey. I mean, do we want to eliminate lines in general? Do we want to eliminate nets?
Does he want a world without lines? Like, I don't know. We need to – some things need to be spread.
I can see – I imagine his argument is that it makes the game quicker in a way. I don't know how you eliminate offsides. I mean, it's such an integral part of hockey.
Yeah.
You can't have guys cherry picking in the other team's zone.
Trust me, recreationally, I would have loved it because
it would change the structure of the game way too much and the flow of the game, I think.
Next one is sort of related to face-offs, which of course has been an issue so far this season, is that each team gets, you get one cheating warning per period. And then if you violate that, any additional penalties or any additional cheating that happens, the other team just gets automatic possession of the puck.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that, but then they go on to say that you should have harsher punishments on face-offs. But we talked about this on Wednesday's show. Mm-hmm. They're already kicking guys out of the face-off circle at a record rate, right? So how much more harsh can you be on the centers, right? We saw with Chicago, Brent Seabrook and Gustav Forsling had to take faceoffs. They're defensemen, mm-hmm. right? So I think the NHL's crackdown has already gone a little bit too far. I mentioned this on Wednesday's show, Drew, that I think the slashing penalties, I'm all for that. I mean, you got to take that out of the game because guys were getting hand and wrist injuries, Dave. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about the faceoffs, I mean, drop the puck. I mean, come on. Was this ever a big problem here?
Not what I would describe as a key problem at any point in time. Next idea is that you're no longer allowed to ice the puck on power plays. And this is one that I could see happening, not immediately, but maybe in the not-too-distant future I could see the NHL implementing this one.
This one I actually don't mind. I actually think it's kind of interesting because I think it penalizes the team that's taking a penalty. You're really now – you can't – get a lot of relief, right? You can't use that as a method of just relieving the pressure and whittling down the time. So from my perspective, that one's interesting in terms of what would that do to the game? How would that change it? How would that, because again, like I said, that's going to keep the puck in the zone probably more often than not with guys not wanting to take, a whistle or what you're going to do with it. But I like that. I mean, again, we're talking about kind of kooky ideas to change the game. It's interesting.
Yeah, Dave, if they are going to look at changing that, I would say that make it so that you have to cross your blue line as opposed to crossing the red line.
So you can ice it as long as...
If you're over the blue line.
If you're over the blue line as opposed... Okay.
I mean, I don't think you can say that you can't ice the puck from...
But I think it's sort of... I mean, truthfully, when... How many times are people dump... If you have control of the puck and you're outside of the blue line...
Yeah.
You're usually in a pretty good position to begin with. So it's
right.
Not like it's... there's that many teams dumping it in... From behind the blue line. They almost already get to the red line and then dump it in on
the
power play.
Yeah, that's probably more interesting to me than some of those other ones.
The next one comes from Sam McCaig, who's a features editor at the Hockey News, says get rid of the shootout altogether.
Yes. I've been saying this since 2005.
So you're okay with 3-on-3, then 2-on-2, and then...
I don't know about that. I like 4-on-4 for 10 minutes, the old Kenny Holland idea.
But... You're definitely death to the shootouts.
Who cares about shootouts anymore? Does anybody actually like shootouts? Let's get something.
I don't see anybody leaving.
Drew, let's get something going on Twitter here.
No, let's not. You can get something going on your Twitter.
I mean, shootouts. I remember, back in 2005. That's 12 years ago now, and Merrick Malik had that goal, and shootouts were kind of exciting. Jussi Jokinen was a shootout specialist. Does anybody really care now? Like, let's just flip the coin.
Well, yeah, it's definitely a coin flip. I'm fine going 3-on-3 for 10 minutes. I mean, if you can't resolve something within 10 minutes of 3-on-3
or 4-on-4 for 5 and then 3-on-3, not 2-on-2. 2-on-2 is...
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
It's too silly.
Yeah.
No, I'd be fine with getting rid of these shootouts. I don't think anybody really enjoys them. I think the shtick is over, and I think it was a gimmick, and now it's kind of tired.
And the last one comes from Jared Clinton, and it's one that's been talked about ad nauseum. Getting rid of the three-point games, either all games are worth 3 points, or
that's a good one.
Games.
Yeah, and I mean these last two or three aren't kooky ideas. The first five were a little bit kooky, but when you're talking about the three-point system, Huss wrote about that for Metro, and so I agree with that. I think you should go back to the old system.
Yeah, Of course, but it's not going to happen because the NHL loves the parity and the fact that everybody's in it until the last week of the season.
I didn't see the most important one, number 9, from Ezra Ginsberg. No more delay of game penalty when you take the puck from your zone and put it over the glass.
Flip it over the glass?
Yeah, Ezzy hates that penalty.
I know Ezzy hates that, but I don't mind that
one. I actually don't mind that penalty either, but I know Ezzy hates
that. What I don't like is that there isn't discretion involved.
Well,
what I mean by that is if the player clearly shoots the puck over the glass, he should get a penalty. But if it's accidental, I don't think it should be a penalty.
Once you give discretion, then it's almost an impossible. You're asking too much of the officials to determine what. I mean, there's never any discretion involved when it comes to tripping. Nobody, you often don't deliberately trip a guy. It's usually accidental, and the call is made regardless. So this is just if you do it, you're penalized for it.
All I know is, Drew, when you're listening to our show, listener discretion is advised.
When we come back, we discuss Alex Galchenyuk. He's on the Habs' fourth line. We discuss how the Habs have handled him, and is he long-term in Montreal? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
We're all keeping an eye on Alex Galchenyuk. His numbers, 0-4 right now. Not a single point. Right now, they've demoted him to the fourth line, but long-term, what's going to happen with this guy?
Well, first of all, where else are you going to put him if you're Claude Julien right now? He's been arguably their worst player since the start of the season. His confidence is shaking. You could argue his psyche is fragile right now. They need to rehabilitate this player, and that's what they're going to try and do. They work with him in the video room. They try to show him what he's doing wrong. He's giving the puck away. He's playing on the perimeter. It's not the good time right now to trade Alex Galchenyuk, and I know that's why the Habs fans are wanting to give this guy a fresh start. Why? So another team can get him. For a dime on the dollar, that doesn't make sense for Mark Bergevin. They have to bring this player back up to what they believe he is. A lot of us believe he's a talented player. Right now, he's a shade of his former self, but they're going to work with him. They're going to be patient.
Tough times for the former third overall pick, Alex Galchenyuk. Things not off to a good start for him this season in Montreal. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors is final night in town. You know him from FX's The League. Steve Ranazzisi in town. Two shows tonight, 7:15 and 10 p.m. Of course, even though it's middle of October, it's time to start thinking about your holiday party. Maybe you're in charge. Maybe you're on your work social committee. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, a great location for your holiday party. And, of course, New Year's Eve plans. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, two great shows on New Year's Eve to keep you entertained and laughing all the way through the new year.
Yeah, I saw that Jamie Kennedy's also coming up at Rumors in November.
November 2nd through 4th, if you will.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Hilarious guy.
Yes, indeed. Let's talk about Alex Galchenyuk of the Montreal Canadiens. A poor start to the season, to put it mildly. 0 points thus far in 4 games for the Habs. You heard Pierre LeBrun talking about it. Have the Montreal Canadiens, to some extent, ruined Alex Galchenyuk by bouncing him back and forth between the left wing and center, and then he's a centerman, and then he's a left wing, and now he's just a player who's really got fragile confidence?
I don't think the Habs have ruined him, and I think it's clear that Galchenyuk is struggling. He's on Yakupov Island right now, and Pierre LeBrun mentioned that now is not the time you want to trade Alex Galchenyuk, and I agree with Pierre. And he's got no goals in the first 4 games, Drew, but he also was not good in the first round for the Habs last year, right? He had no goals in 6 games for the Canadiens. They couldn't get offense out of Galchenyuk. And, you mentioned that Galchenyuk has kind of gone from left wing to center, back to left wing. Mm-hmm. I think he's better suited on the wing, actually. And I realize that the Montreal Canadiens' weakness right now is up the middle, right? You've got Thomas Plekanec, who I believe has the flu right now, and you've got Philip Deneau there. And obviously Jonathan Drouin they've been using as a center too, Drew, but... Yeah. I mean, let's be honest here. It's only 4 games, but you almost have to change your expectations, I think, Dave, of Galchenyuk. Now, Galchenyuk went third overall in 2012, the same year Trouba was drafted, of course, and Yakupov went first overall. That's why I think there are some comparisons. That wasn't a very good draft, in my opinion. But when you're talking about Galchenyuk and Yakupov, both of these players have not lived up to expectations. We were talking about players that, you know, many scouts thought were going to be 70, 80-point players at the NHL level, right? Mm-hmm. And Galchenyuk had his career year a couple years ago, but, you know, last year...
30 goals 2 years ago.
Right, and last year, you know, he had the injury problems, but, I mean, this is a player that the Habs had penciled in as a top six, top three forward for them, and now he's on the fourth line. He started off the season on the third line, so Galchenyuk's got to get going. I don't think he's going to get traded right now. And it goes back to what we were talking about before. I mean, you're not going to trade a guy right now when his stock is low.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you got to stick with Galchenyuk. He can't be playing on the fourth line.
Well, if you're the Montreal Canadiens and you see that Alex Galchenyuk, obviously he's talented. He scored 30 goals 2 years ago.
He's very talented.
Last year he would have had, if he was healthy for the full year, he would easily would have been a 25-goal scorer.
Yep.
You're a team that can't score, the Montreal Canadiens. They have difficulty scoring.
Yep.
Don't have a lot of offensive talent. Maybe he can't. Maybe he's not going to be the centerman you thought he was when he was drafted third overall. But shouldn't you just say to him, look, focus on being the best left winger that you can possibly be. You're going to be a 25 to 30 goal guy in the league if you stay healthy for the entirety of the season. Instead, this all this uncertainty and the desire to move him around, and sure, I know you're desperate to find a centerman, but sometimes you just can't pound the square peg into the round hole.
Well, you're desperate to get wins right now as well, Drew. The Habs only have one win in their first four games, and they, as you mentioned, only have five goals in four games. So they're really struggling right now. But yes, to answer your question, I mean, they do have to tell Galchenyuk just to play their game, but play his game, pardon me. But when you're talking about Claude Julien, I mean, he has a very high accountability level with his players. Claude Julien, in my opinion, is one of the best coaches in the league. And, I mean, I expect the Habs to be a playoff team this year. They're struggling. But, you know, that's why losing Alex Radulov was a big deal. Losing Andrei Markov was a big deal. Losing Mikhail Sergachev, obviously, to get Jonathan Drouin, it was a move they felt that they had to make. Mark Bergevin felt he had to make that move. But, look, Galchenyuk's not playing well, and I think it has more so to do with he looks unmotivated at times. He's not, you know, getting back on the back check. So, I mean, he has to improve his game. That's got to come from within. So I don't think necessarily that the coaching or the team, the organization has really, you know, I would say, I don't think they've really, negatively affected his career at all by misusing him. I think Galchenyuk has to be better, plain and simple.
Well, this is a guy who was, you know, he signed a contract extension in the offseason, a three-year, $14.7 million contract extension. Yet he was also sort of bandied about a little bit in trade conversations that they might be looking to trade him this offseason as well. So is it maybe sort of the...
We don't know how close that was to happening.
Yeah, we don't, but you heard his name out there, and you'd never really heard his name much right before. So you begin to wonder, is this a guy who's... You know, has he maybe checked out mentally from the Montreal Canadiens? Does he maybe need a mental reset to start this year?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, Drew. I know that he's been getting a lot of ice time. He's averaging over 16 minutes a game, almost four minutes of power play. Former Habs, Chris Nyland, who covers the team now, he said this was how he described the game, his last game. This kid's got to get his feet moving. He doesn't move his feet. He gets over the blue line and he spreads his legs. You have to keep your feet moving out there, especially in the offensive zone. You want to be a threat. He does it a lot. He stops skating. That's one of his greatest assets. Yeah, he can handle the puck, and yeah, he's got a great shot. But if you're not skating, you're not going to get it done. He often looks in between. He spreads his legs. He's looking to pass. He's not shooting. He's the Temptations right now, a ball of confusion. It's an interesting point because, I mean, and obviously Nyland watches him game in, game out, so, you know, that's a good assessment of Galchenyuk's play. But it's an interesting argument. Like, how do you get a player motivated? How do you get a player re-energized? I mean, we see it here with Winnipeg, with Nick Petan, right? Here's a player who has talent, but he's not going to succeed when he's playing on a fourth-line role. He needs to be up on a second or third line to have the success he's going to need to have, right?
And, play him with skilled players.
Right. And so right now they've got him on the fourth line with, I think, who is he with?
Torrey Mitchell and Alex Hemsky.
Yeah, so he's with Mitchell and Hemsky. I mean, how much success is he going to have on that fourth line versus if he's playing up in the lineup? But conversely, when you're giving him that much ice time and he's not succeeding, It's a tough situation. But look, Montreal's not having, as Ezzy touched on, Montreal's not having any success right now. And if they're going to keep rolling with what they're doing, and I mean, they don't want to try him at center. Mark Bergevin was asked about that in the summer, and he said he's not going to be a center day in and day out. He just doesn't. His intimation was he just can't handle that much responsibility game in, game out for an 82-game season. But I mean, what are they? I just don't know what they're going to do in Montreal. It's It's a little bit of a tire fire.
Yeah, and why aren't more people talking about Max Pacioretty, right? I mean, nobody's really scoring for the Montreal Canadiens, Drew, right
they
now.
They have 5 goals in 4 games.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I mentioned that earlier, and obviously you weren't listening. But when you talk
I was listening. I was just reiterating. Thank you. Thank you, Pickle Chips.
No, but the reality is, I mean, they need more out of Philip Deneau. He's centering the second line right now. They need more, I would say, out of Elish Hemsky, who they signed to that 1-year deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Plekanec looks like he's not going to play tonight. They need more out of Brendan Gallagher, who's leading the team in points right now with 2 points. And I really like Brendan Gallagher, but you need more offense from the defense, right? You want Shea Weber to be scoring more goals. So Jonathan Drouin doesn't have a goal yet, right? So it's not just Alex Galchenyuk, but I think Alex Galchenyuk, to your point earlier, Drew, is becoming the whipping boy.
Yeah, well, and that's it. I think he's becoming the whipping boy, which makes you wonder how...
It's like Scott Gomez back in the day.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, certainly he was a whipping boy there, you know, for a long period of time. But, you know, when you're the third overall pick only a few years back and you have a 30-goal season under your belt, I'm not sure what you're proving by putting him on the fourth line.
Well, he's trying to get him motivated. I mean, if he's not playing well, what options do you have, right? You can essentially put him in the press box, or you can put him on the third or fourth line, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a conundrum because you how do you get an offensively talented player back to being an offensively talented player?
Do you
do it by, you know, a carrot or the stick? Right now they're trying the stick approach where playing him on the fourth line with, you know, Alex Hemsky, a guy who's certainly a journeyman, and Torrey Mitchell, who doesn't have the offensive capabilities to complement a guy like Alex Galchenyuk.
I think you want to have Galchenyuk with Drouin.
That would be certainly a shot in the arm.
That's the only way they're going to start scoring goals. I mean, those are the guys that are going to score goals, right?
Yeah.
Like, those are your two best offensive players. I mean, Max Pacioretty obviously is also a guy that scores a lot of goals. But Pacioretty, you know, is also struggling. It's Drouin and Galchenyuk. That's the future of your team right there.
Yeah, and Max Pacioretty, you know, you put him down with, you know, into a second line role maybe, and he's a guy who's certainly been able to score at the NHL level as well. But I would try and... Rather than you sort of piling on Alex Galchenyuk, I would try and not reward him, but maybe boost up his confidence by playing him with other skilled players. It'll be interesting to see what the Habs do tonight. They're at home to the Toronto Maple Leafs, and the Canadiens have absolutely dominated the Leafs as of late. It'll be interesting to see that game. That's one of the other games that's on TV tonight, along with the Jets and the Hurricanes. So it'll be an interesting dynamic there, because things could quickly go off the rails in Montreal if they're not careful.
Yeah, another guy that we haven't mentioned that hasn't looked great in his first 4 games is Carey Price.
Well,
his numbers aren't very good right now, but we expect that to be better.
Nothing is going well right now with the Montreal Canadiens. When we come back, Aaron Portsline of The Athletic in Columbus is going to join us. The Blue Jackets are in town on Tuesday night to meet the Jets. We'll touch base with Aaron and talk about the Blue Jackets' start to the season. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Rage Against the Mandel.
Can you stop doing that, please? Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you on this Saturday morning. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From The Athletic in Columbus, Ohio, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Aaron Portsline. Aaron, I got to say, it sounds a little bit weird to introduce you that way.
What, really good friend?
No. You know very well what I meant there, Mr. Portsline.
I know. I have to tell you, I've embarrassingly introduced myself a couple times or left messages saying, "Hey, Aaron Portsline with the Dispatch." Whoa, no, stop. I forgot who I work for now. It's only 30 years, you know. It gets, kind of gets burned into your brain a little bit.
Aaron, James Myrtle's not going to like that.
Oh, I think James will understand.
James, I'm sure James will be fine with it. Aaron, we obviously brought you on to talk about the Blue Jackets. They make their lone appearance in Winnipeg on Tuesday night. You know, a good start to the Blue Jackets season so far, 3-1 through their first 4 games. You know, this team sort of, obviously, they had the terrific regular season last year, their best in franchise history. The disappointing playoff defeat to the to the defending Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, this team sort of just picking up where they left off last season so far.
I don't think so. I mean, the results are, you know, they're 3-1, so it's a good start for them. It's different. It feels different, and they actually had a kind of a turbulent off season, quietly a turbulent off season with Saad going out, Panarin coming in, with William Karlsson going to Vegas, with Josh Anderson not signing until 3 days before the season started. They lost Scott Hartnell. They lost Sam Gagne. There's quite a bit of turnover. Like their defense is pretty much the same. Goaltending is more settled than it was, but the up front, the forward position has really been, it's been good. It's not that it's been bad. It's just been unsettled, and they're trying to figure out how things best work or how to get things really going. So it's been kind of a feeling out process. Really good in the first game, not very good in the second. Ass ugly game Tuesday in Carolina, just terrible. And last night's game had a lot of pace and skill to it. It was fun. They're still kind of figuring out who they are up front.
Now, Aaron, we have to ask you about Sonny Milano, a first-rounder from back in 2014. He's got 4 goals in the first 4 games. He played a few games last year and a few games a couple of years back, but it looks like he's going to stick with the Blue Jackets now for a full season. What's been the biggest difference in his game this year compared to the last couple of years?
It is just night and day, and it's an incredible change by this kid because he was I got to tell you, even this offseason, when you would mention his name to scouts, people around the league, you get eye rolls and smirks and snickers almost because this guy was such a wild hare. I really don't think Columbus expected him to be on the team coming out of training camp, but he has really taken all of that silly risk that was in his game. He's minimized it. He's taking chances, smarter now. He's not doing the stretch passes from his own zone at the end of a long shift. He's not forcing pucks with nothing behind him in the neutral zone. That's the kind of stuff he always tried to get away with. Everything to him was a scoring chance. Now he's starting to understand where he's at and on the ice, where the game is at situationally, and they've calmed him down a little bit. They've calmed down the worst parts of his game and allowed him to sort of succeed on the best parts of the game. There's always been things there to like, and he's accentuating those and starting to get rid of the other stuff.
Aaron, Artemi Panarin had quite the start against the Rangers. Sounded like he was fantastic that game. What have you noticed about him since he's transitioned to the Blue Jackets?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I think people in Chicago are like, we tried to tell you he's a great passer too, but you wouldn't listen. The guy's a great passer. You get blinded by the one-timer. He's got an incredible one-timer. He's a great passer. Last night, it was great. He just kind of got fed up with all the struggles that line was having, getting up the ice. It was like, get out of the way. I'll take it the length here. How hard was this? And just skated around 3 guys and scored. It was the go-ahead goal, a game-winning goal. He's the all-round package.
Aaron Portsline, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Aaron covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for TheAthletic.com in Columbus. Aaron, Boone Jenner still out of the lineup for the Blue Jackets. What's the latest on him? I'm sure the Blue Jackets and back injuries probably strike terror in a lot of Blue Jackets fans' hearts. And how has the team missed Jenner's presence thus far this year?
Yeah, well, I mean, the club has not been forthcoming with much information on this. We have learned that it's a back injury, but that's such a vague, wide-ranging scope of things. We have no reason to believe that it's serious other than the fact that he's not skated with the group yet, and that includes training camp. That's not a good sign. He skated on his own a little bit. No timetable for his return. They've not diagnosed it or told us a timetable. So, you know, it's up to us to frame it as such. it's a big hole for them because, I mean, this team was defined by its toughness along the wall, its ability to compete and battle and being really hard to play against. And that, you know, not only is Jenner not out there, but they've taken Foligno away from the wall a little bit, put him at center ice because they needed to. They're missing some of that sort of board work down low. And they've, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois is a pretty big dude and a physical guy. I don't think he's got quite the pedigree of being hard to play against that Boone Jenner does yet. So they miss him. Absolutely. That's been part of the struggle. When you hear Tortorella talk about them not having a lot of grit and energy and hard work that they've always had before, I think that's where he's going.
Aaron, you just mentioned Pierre-Luc Dubois, and I wanted to ask you about him. Drafted third overall back in 2016, picked up his first NHL goal recently. How has he looked, and do you expect him to stick with the Blue Jackets and play the whole year with Columbus?
Yeah, I think he sticks. I think Jenner's injury is a great help to him in that regard. I mean, we'll be soon here coming up upon the 9-game barrier if they want to send him back and have his entry-level deal pushed. So that's something to watch, but he does look a lot more comfortable on the wing than he does center. Less responsibility. He uses his body pretty well. He skated last night at the start of the game and for most of the game on the fourth line. No shame in that for a 19-year-old. But he gets in front of the goalie. He takes a load of push to get him away from the net. He looks great. I don't think he's the number three overall pick that just blows you away with his skill and dynamic play. But he is a hard, hard player to move off the puck and a hard guy to get the puck away from in the corner. So he's been good. I think maybe this is what they expected from him last year, but better late than never.
Well, his father will be happy to hear that as the assistant coach here in Manitoba with the Moose. But, Aaron, my question is about Seth Jones. He's entering his sixth season in the NHL. He had a bit of an offensive increase, I would say, last year, 12 goals, 30 assists. Do you anticipate that his game is going to continue to grow offensively?
This is Seth Jones?
Yeah, Seth Jones.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the tough part for him, I think he would be a star in a lot of situations. He's certainly a fan favorite in Columbus, but the glow and the glare of rookie Zach Werenski mm-hmm. has taken a lot of the credit that Seth Jones would normally get away. Those two are an absolutely dynamic top pair. He doesn't get any first team power play time. He didn't last year, which makes that 12 and 30 even more impressive. As long as they stick in the 1-3-1 setup, he won't get it again this year. But for him, I don't see any reason why he can't repeat what he did last year, and any reason, frankly, why those numbers shouldn't continue to climb, especially if for some reason he should end up with more power play time.
Aaron Portsline, our guest. Aaron covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the athletic.com in Columbus. And Aaron, you mentioned Zach Werenski, and leads me to my follow-up question. What does he do for an encore? He burst onto the scene last season, of course, with the 47 points in the 78 games, got injured in the playoffs. What are expectations, fair expectations for Werenski this year?
They are through the roof. I mean, this kid is something. He leaves last spring with John Davidson saying to him, as great as your wrist shot is, maybe you should do a little work on your one-timer this summer. So where most guys would say, all right, I'll pump a few bucks and work on the one-timer, Werenski hires a coach in Ann Arbor, and they go to work. I wrote about this a few weeks back. They go to work at an almost obsessive level working on his slap shot. And you've seen it already this year in their first four games where he's let a couple go. Now, the weird thing is he has relied on his wrist shot all the way through college, all the way through his rookie year. It's an unbelievable wrist shot. It just has that knack to get it through traffic. But he uses a stick that's so flexible that the wrist shot gets on people quicker than they're expecting. But you wonder if he can use that flexible a stick for a slap shot as well. he was joking and said he's got a slap shot stick and a wrister stick, and he won't tell anybody which one he takes out for which power play. But the kid is so driven, so motivated, seems so unaffected by the great season he had as a rookie that the organization is just over the moon about this kid.
You know, Aaron, we talked about Boone Jenner earlier, and he's obviously currently injured. We talked about that already. You mentioned Scott Hartnell now going back to the Nashville Predators. With those two physical players not playing with the Blue Jackets right now, have they had to change their style of play at all?
I think there's an understanding that their style is going to change. Keep in mind, Josh Anderson was out of the lineup for the first two games, too, and they just look totally different. They got pushed around. Really knocked around bad by Chicago, second game of the season. I've not seen a Columbus team get pushed around like that for a few years. They've usually been the more physical team. It's different. I mean, Panarin is a different kind of player than Saad. Again, Foligno off the wall, playing center ice, changes his ability to really get down there and grind away without thinking or worrying what's going the other direction as much. That it's different. And frankly, that's been the challenge here early on, has been just sort of morphing a little bit towards the skill end of the game. I think they feel like they need to get there to compete with Pittsburgh, to compete with Washington, to maybe get out of the first round of the playoffs for the first time in franchise history. But they're trying to do that in a way that doesn't force them to just change their identity altogether. They still want to keep that hard to play against, really physical aspect. The other thing with this team that's of interest to me is they've lost a ton of weight the last couple of years. The players that are here have really thinned down. They've traded some larger players for smaller players. You mentioned Hartnell leaving. Bjorkstrand comes in. They're like 6 to 8 pounds lighter on average per player than they were last year. That's a significant difference across your lineup.
Aaron, I wish I could say I've dropped weight as well. At least they've still got Brandon Dubinsky there, though, right? Especially if they play the Penguins in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, he's lost like 15 pounds. Yeah, but they do have Dubinsky. His wrist is messed up now. He had surgery; he's recovering from it. It'll be fine for the playoffs.
Aaron, in an interesting quirk of the schedule for the AHL and NHL, your AHL affiliate, the Cleveland Monsters, are in town this weekend. They played last night with a 4-3 win, and they played again tomorrow afternoon. How much synergy is there between head coach John Madden and head coach John Tortorella between the two organizations?
You know, I there's a lot. I mean, I think they certainly communicate with it. I think it's more organizationally.
Mm-hmm. Got some water there, Aaron, by the way?
What's that?
You got some water there? Sounds like you're coughing a little bit.
Boys, I'm dying. there is just geographically, having Cleveland so close to Columbus has been an absolute stroke of genius. I know a lot of AHL and NHL teams have done this. I mean, they are always there at games, management is. They've called up guys that, frankly, no one expected them to call up because those are the guys that have going, and they're there every day to see it. The systems are almost identical from one team to the next, although Tortorella doesn't demand that. But the one thing that they've started to do, and we'll be writing about this on The Athletic for early next week, is the development coaches, the Blue Jackets development coaches, are literally going to be on the bench with Cleveland this year. They're going to be literally on the ice with Cleveland for practices this year. And while Madden and the coaches are handling forwards and defensemen, the development coach will be there to point out certain situations, certain reads, certain plays to the prospects to say, this could have been done better, try it this way next time. So the coaching from a development standpoint isn't going on just between games. It's actually going on during games as well.
Aaron Portsline covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for TheAthletic.com in Columbus. Aaron, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, well, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Our pleasure, Aaron. Let's head to break. When we come back, we got one final segment to wrap things up on this Saturday morning. Blue Bomber game day, of course, coming up at 1 o'clock as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
final segment this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Drew, what is your age again?
Can you stop? It's really going to get annoying anyways. Big thank you to all of our guests on this morning's show. Aaron Portsline from The Athletic in Columbus. James O'Brien from Pro Hockey Talk. Brendan Lemieux, Manitoba Moose forward. And John Forsland, Carolina Hurricanes broadcaster for Fox Sports Carolina.
It's been a nice little Saturday today.
Nice little Saturday. Yep. In case you missed any of the program, it's going to be available for download on iTunes. You can subscribe on Google Play. Get it sent to your device each and every week. It's also available on our website, illegalcurve.com.
Yeah, I got to say also, the Timbit passing, the Timbit distribution in the studio has been nice today.
That's good. You guys brought your A-game when it came to the Timbits?
Well, the Hoover didn't destroy them, so we're all good.
Hoover being, of course, producer Rory.
Yes.
Paul Maurice met with the assembled media this morning. Some roster changes for the Winnipeg Jets. Here's Jets head coach Paul Maurice.
Paul, what can you tell us about Adam Lowry's status?
Yeah, out tonight, day to day. We're quite hopeful that this will be enough to get him back in, feeling right on for Columbus.
Upper, lower? What can you?
We'll go upper. He had it going into the Van game, and it didn't improve and started to deteriorate toward the end of the game. So we just got to jump on this early. It shouldn't be anything long term.
Dustin Byfuglien's good to go?
He's ready to roll.
What are you looking for from him in this game?
It just fit in with what we're doing, and he was banged up pretty good halfway through that Calgary game, so he hasn't had a lot of play here in the last week. But, he's such a force. We miss him on the back end on that power play, that shot threat, and the movement that group has. So we felt we've missed him there, and he and Tolby have played some real fine hockey together for us, so we're hoping that pairing can match it again.
What went into the decision to go with Connor for a third consecutive game here?
Well, a bunch of things. The first would just be play. You know, he's back-to-back games that looked identical. He let one in there, the 3-2 goal the other night that he'd like to have back, and those things happened. But his play after that was just very mature and very confident. And then part of it also is schedule. So he's played the last two games. We've had two travel days in there. We haven't practiced very much, so we'll get Steve some practice time, and we'll take a look at him for Columbus.
What will you be looking for from Joel Armia? You said you wanted to get a little bit more pace. Have you seen...
Just a little bit quicker. You know, he had a lower body injury in training camp, and we really felt that set him back. And he had a tough night there before he came out with some turnovers that were pretty expensive for us. So get back, find your game, keep it simple so that you can start building some confidence. It'll be a challenge here. These guys are quick, and they're on the puck, and you've got to move it. You've got to make your decision. You've got to move that puck as fast as you can. So what he needs to do to be successful in this game is exactly what he needs to do to get his game going. So it'll be a good challenge.
Paul, strange schedule for Carolina. They've only played two games in the first 10 days. They're probably getting sick of practicing.
Yeah.
So what do you expect when a team hasn't played very much? And
yeah, Bill does a good job there. The two games that they played, Washington, Mini, both real tough opponents, and they gave them all they could handle. They're very, very quick. They'll be ready. So their message in their room is real simple. Well, these guys just came off the West Coast. We all know what those trips are. Let's hop on them early. We'll all remember the first game last year. They certainly did that to us. But they've got a tremendous amount of quickness. They've got an outstanding power play. So we need to be real disciplined with our sticks, and that's a challenge with their quickness. A simple game for us early is mostly important.
Do you see some similarities between the makeup of their roster and your roster?
Well, I think they're both real dangerous off quick strikes, right? They can knock things down. They got nice hands, and if they counter quickly, and that may be the team that counters this puck the quickest, that moves it from a change in possession to going north with speed, is going to have the best opportunities in here.
Coming off the one home game you've played here, is there any concern that players are going to go out there and try and make it up by...
No, you know what? I think the road takes some of that starch out of you, so we'll just come in here and play the game. It's almost like a continuation of the road trip. We go out, and we got to get used to this because it happens, so we go out and play, fly home and play the next day. That's a lot of the way our schedule's structured, so we got to get used to it. It's going to be a good challenge in here, and those first 10-15 minutes for us are going to be really important tonight.
Jets head coach Paul Maurice addressing the media after the game day skate and prior to the Jets and the Hurricanes, a 6 p.m. puck drop tonight, a game you can, of course, hear live on TSN 1290. One more time, Adam Lowry out of the lineup, Connor Hellebuck starts, Dustin Byfuglien returns to the lineup, Tucker Poolman out of the lineup. So, you know, a good... It's an important game for the Jets. They're trying to bounce back after the disappointing effort on home ice last Wednesday against the Leafs. They have some good feelings after the road trip, a 2-1 road trip. They want to keep it going tonight against the Carolina Hurricanes. Do something for their home ice fans. You know, the fans, they need to get some good vibes going at Bell MTS Place after what happened last Wednesday against the Leafs.
Yeah, you absolutely want to give your fans something to cheer about. Obviously, the first period was the only good period against the Leafs, I thought, in my opinion. I think you guys would agree with that.
In the first 10 minutes of it, sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when you're talking about the Hurricanes, we already talked about the fact that they've only played two games. So you know that this is going to be a well-rested, well-practiced, hungry team, right, Dave? So you have to make sure that your start's good, and you have to make sure that all three periods are good. And obviously, Dustin Byfuglien is coming back after missing two games, but he's a guy that's been in this league for a long time, so I don't expect any type of rust from Buff. He played a lot in the preseason too, Drew. But it should be a great one. I mean, the Jets have a great opportunity here to win three in a row, but it's not going to be easy against a very talented Hurricanes team.
You know, quickly noticing when we played the audio from the Hurricanes game last year and how loud the building was and how passionate the fans sounded, we haven't heard that a lot. And really, the Jets need to get this fan base kind of motivated and excited about a season that everybody has so much expectation for.
That's it for the Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jersey. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com. Big props to producer Rory doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Manouk, for old Pickle Chips Ginsburg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Manouk Blue Bomber Game Day here on TSN 1290.
Said the other team will be all right.